Hey, you are listening to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 14.
Hey, welcome back to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 14. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are the Fanboys Who Strike Back. Most weeks we bring you a podcast filled with comic book reviews, top fives, movie reviews, TV reviews now. And I know we've been away for a while, but we're back and we got some new stuff for you guys.
Yeah,
just a warning, we'll be talking about comic books that came out this week. So there's going to be some spoilers, so if you don't want to be spoiled, go ahead and pause the podcast, come back to it later. And David, I think it was your pick this week. So starting off for us, what did you have this week?
Okay, well, much to your delight, Eric, this week I picked X-Men number 203 as the best book of the week, and I'm sure that this would have been the best book that you read also, right?
You know, I stopped reading it at X-Men 200. It was my on and off quickly there, but I did notice Gambit's not on the cover, Mystique's not on the cover, like, these kind of seem like pivotal characters in that storyline. What's going on?
Well, the thing is that this was, I think it was kind of a lackluster week, and I'm not trying to play down this book. This was a great book, but this was kind of an iffy week, and so I was actually surprised that this was the best book that I read. Like I put in my review on the site, I haven't been a huge fan of Mike Carey's run because really nothing has happened. And all of a sudden, ever since X-Men 200, this has kind of been building up to a big event. And we had the Return of the Marauders, and we're going back to characters like Destiny, and who was a mutant that saw the future and wrote down all, you know, these different timelines that she saw. And slowly, it's coming together to be something really big. We have the reemergence of Mr. Sinister, who is a major X-Men villain. And in this issue, he takes out Cannonball and Iceman in like one blow, so it's really cool to see that. But while we still don't know exactly what's going on, the reason why I really wanted to pick this book is that we don't know what's going on, but we do know it's something very, very big. Something is revolving around all these characters, and something has to do with certain mutants that are out of time or are from different realities, or mutants that can see the future. So I'm very, very intrigued with what's going on. Herberto Ramos is doing the art, and it's kind of like I said on the site, I'm usually very, very hit and miss with this art. Back in the day when he was doing like Impulse, I didn't really like it because I thought it was like too childish, which fit the tone of that book, but I wasn't a big fan. But he's really kind of toned it down a little bit, and so it really lends itself to this book. This book is now focusing on Cannonball and Iceman, who are two of my favorite characters, two of my favorite X-Men. So, it's definitely not a jumping on point. It's definitely for the hardcore X-Men fan, but if you are one of those hardcore X-Men fans, then you're going to love this book, so definitely check it out.
Okay. Well, the books that I read that I really liked were the same books that have been reading and have been really liking. I know I wanted to mention Teen Titans number 51. Which is the first actual chapter of the Titans of Tomorrow storyline by Sean McKeever. And oh boy, did I love this. It was just so good, and it's revisiting one of the better storylines of Jeff Johns' run, which the Titans of the future come back, basically, and they're all corrupted in some way. But there was just a lot of interesting twists and turns about how they explained how Connor and Bart came back, that Tim was actually ended up being successful in cloning them. But as you see, you know, something must have gone horribly wrong because they're very skewed characters, and it didn't work out right. And another kind of fun aspect of it was seeing Tim Drake struggle with his future self, as far as he never wants to be Batman, and he still doesn't want to be Batman, even though we see him lose more and more people in his life, slowly get pushed towards that. Out of all of the Robins and everyone close, Tim Drake is the most likeliest candidate to become Batman in the future. and that's what the story kind of revolves around, and he's still kind of fighting that idea and that mentality and that very self-centered black and white view that his future self has. And at the very end of it, he kind of says, well, I'm going to make a real difference, and I can make a real difference by not corrupting my morals or anything like that. And the last panel book was him holding a gun. He's like, I can do this, and I can stop you by doing this. And it, there was something about, see who does the artwork, actually, real quick. Ollie Garza, fantastic work in this book. And it just had a lot of energy. The Titans look fantastic. It's kind of cartoony, kind of animated style, but it just works really well for this book. And it was a fantastic, fantastic story. It's just very, very exciting, very fast-paced, and so feels like a very action-heavy movie.
Yeah, I didn't like this too much, actually. I like the older Titans and the Titans that are evil and stuff. I just got really, really confused with the whole time travel aspect of the story, because to me it made no sense, because it's like, they had the older Titans had to come back and capture JLA so that they could help the younger Titans do something, but if the older Titans are back there helping the newer Titans, then that doesn't make sense, because that means that their future wouldn't even come to pass. And I know that's a nitpick, but like the whole time I was like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't understand what's going on at all. Yeah, it's something to do with Starro, but like to me, I was just completely lost.
I mean, they tried to explain that by saying they right before their own destruction, or right before their world was wiped out. But in like any kind of time travel story, you kind of either have to go with it or not. And if you go with it, then you can kind of accept the storyline hanging out there, and you can't really accept that, then yeah, I can understand how it'd be kind of a difficult read or difficult to get into the story that way.
Yeah, but it was alright. I mean, I like those characters from John's run, so it was cool. What did you think about JLA number 13?
I thought it was okay. It didn't seem to have as much energy as the Justice League wedding special. The thing about this, it's written by Dwayne McDuff, who did the JLU cartoon, and the thing that kind of bothered me about this was I'd seen a lot of this before in the cartoon, and I'm not a huge fan of the Silver Age stuff, as we've talked about before, and this is just a very Silver Age notion. It's a Superman's notion of the Legion of Doom, which this is a very much more darker take on it, which is kind of cool. And it is kind of funny to see some of the villains working together, but it was mostly the interactions of the Justice League that I felt kind of boring. It was just like they were trying to tie too much into the cartoon and heavily on like dialogue by Jon Stewart, like, maybe I should shave my head and grow a goatee.
That was pretty forced.
Yeah, and it was forced. It took me right out of the story. I did like some of the villains working together. There was a problem. Usually I can skip over continuity okay, but in this, like, Oliver Queen is alive and well, and Diana's going off to fight the Justice League, and she just killed him on her honeymoon, so I don't
understand. Wait, she killed who?
Oh, did you not read that?
No! What happened?
Oh my god, yeah. The wedding special, the final wedding special where they got married, was actually a very adult book. Like, it was drawn very childlike, or very animated style, but Janik wrote it, and it was them getting wedding, and a lot of them, you know, in bed with each other, and dialogue, and couple talk, and stuff like that, and it was really well done, and it had the, typical cheese fest with all the things drop in on the wedding to try and disrupt it, and even the villains know they can't win. It's kind of Terminator and someone else. Who did it? I can't remember off the top of my head. But they were kind of like, well, we'd kick ourselves in the butt and just try. It's kind of interesting to see the tactics that they use to attack the Justice League, and in the end they get defeated, and Deathstroke says, well, we didn't win, we won enough. And leave, or all of them captured except Deathstroke, of course. And so the next scene is they have the wedding, and then we move on to the honeymoon night where they're about to consummate their wedding, and all of a sudden Ollie gets this crazed look in his eye, and he starts attacking Dinah, and basically on top of her, on the ground trying to stab her, and her only, well, the course of action she takes, she takes one of his arrows and jams it through the back of his neck. And next thing we see, like, his he gets, you know, blood out of his mouth, he falls over on her, and he's dead. So then it said that, you know, because they were going to have the Green Arrow Black series coming up, and on that one, it's her with Connor Hawk, the younger Green Arrow.
But Oliver Queen is not dead.
I hope not, but I
he can't
I don't know.
Be. He just came back from the dead.
He came back years ago now. It's been a while, and I don't know.
Oh, they can't kill him already.
That's
really weird. So he was being controlled somehow, obviously?
Apparently, yeah. Something happened where he was being controlled. And it was actually a really good story. It's just like that whole ending was just like, whoa, that was bizarre. It came out of left field, and it shouldn't have. Like, I should have expected it, or something like that. But that was just so intense all of a sudden. I was like, whoa. Like, she just jams the arrow through his neck. And I was like, yeah. I wasn't sure, like, how to really take that. But it was still pretty good.
Huh. Yeah, that's a surprise to me.
I thought you had heard that by now.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about it.
So, yeah, Justice League of America, the book that I was excited about this week, Batman and Robin All-Star.
Oh, dude, I'm done with that. I'm done with that, so you can talk about that by yourself.
Oh, this book is so bad.
What happened? Is Dick Grayson still in the Batcave?
He's still in the Batcave. We actually saw him on this episode. This issue, actually. But, no, you're going to love this. Like, I was laughing through this and just, like, shaking my head. Like, this is so bad, it's good. But Bruce Wayne continues to be the big asshole on the planet. And, villains are killing themselves as he's fighting them. He's laughing and saying, like, it's the best job in the world. Black Canary sees him rough these guys up, and immediately she, like, throws herself at him, like, I don't know. Like, she just goes over and starts throwing herself at him. They end up having sex on the rooftop.
They do what?
Interesting. And then, yeah, no, they just, like, they pull on just, there, they have sex on the rooftop.
Oh, gosh.
And then she gives her ride home, and Gordon puts on her to hell up, and she talks too much, and yada, 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 just as All-Star Batman would. And so basically, one of the gang that was being attacked by Batman was the killer of Dick Grayson's parents. And so he finally takes this guy, as he's knocked out, takes him back to the Batcave, and throws him in front of Dick Grayson and says, I found the guy who killed your parents, what do you want to do about it? And he has Dick Grayson have that axe.
All right.
And he's like, okay, are you going to be a warrior or a hero, or what did he say? Something. Or an Avenger detective, basically. He's like, you have a choice to make. And basically, Dickinson raises his axe, and it comes down, and you're one. And I was wondering, like, is he going to kill him? All-Star Dick Grayson, I'm not sure. But it ends up, he cuts the tape over this guy's mouth so he can talk. And basically, Dick Grayson just beats the snot out of this guy until he says who hired him to kill his parents. And I guess it ended up being the Joker, because that was the last page. So All-Star Batman and Black Canary having sex on the rooftops, All-Star racing in the Batcave. And we still had huge number of references to the goddamn Batman. We got introduced to the goddamn Batmobile.
Why are you buying this? Come on, you realize that you are just, this is so wrong of you to support this.
It's not, I look at it as a comedy. I laugh through this. Like, it's not supposed to be a comedy.
It's not supposed to be taken that way.
I don't know. I don't know. I have to keep reading it. I mean, it's interesting enough to where I have to watch this trainer. I can't take my eyes off of it.
Oh, that's so bad. But
so, going on to something I'm sure you read. What did you think of Avengers the Initiative?
It was actually the first issue that I didn't really like.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm
not sure exactly why, because I'm a huge fan of the New Initiative, and I'm a huge, like, I'm a hardcore New Warriors fan. So I was pretty, like, I was pretty into it with the whole, what happens is that Gauntlet gets attacked by someone, and they paint a New Warrior symbol in his blood on his shirt, and they kind of leave him there. and the whole issue revolves around who did it, because there's several of the former New Warriors on the team, and it's one of those things where everyone's a suspect and you kind of have to go through the motions. And I'm not sure exactly why I didn't like it. I know that I was missing the arc because they changed over.
It's so a little
that
more
was kind of yeah. I think that might have been the biggest thing, is that this was a very serious story. This was probably the most brutal story that we've seen in this book, and this is a very adult book. But yet, this new artist, Steve Yu, it's very, very anime. Like, it's extremely anime. And it's not bad art by any means. I just don't think that it really fit the tone of the book. But, okay. Plus, at the end, you find out that Slapstick was the character that did it. And Slapstick was never an official New Warrior. And that was one of the that was like me being a hardcore New Warriors fan that really took me out of it. Like, it should have been Justice, or it should have been like Rage, but to have like Slapstick kind of stick up for the New Warriors, I was like, dude, he wasn't even a New Warrior. He was like a reserve member. He was like a poor man's New Warrior.
Yes, yeah. See, so I didn't know that history. That's why you're kind of having a problem with that.
Yeah, so it was like, it was a good story for me, but those elements kind of took me out, but those are just because of my loyalties, and so, other than that, it was a good issue.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Like, I'm still on to this book. I think it's good. I think it's one of the better books Marvel has.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
So, did you have anything else this week? Nope, that was pretty much my stuff.
No, that was pretty much mine. Ultimate Spider-Man number 114 came out also. Norman Osborn's back as a Green Goblin. It's Bendis writing Spider-Man, so it's damn good. And that's really all I can say about it.
Alright. Well, we're going to change things up a little bit this week. We're going to start doing different features. We're alternating our top five in and out of the program, and we're going to substitute it some weeks for television reviews and movie reviews and comic news. And we're not getting rid of the top five. It's just being phased in and out. So, because we know some people really do like that. So, this week we have a few things. Week in TV, or a big couple weeks, I guess, in TV since we've been away. Heroes is back. And
Heroes is back.
Well, yes, Dave and I are both big fans of that show. So with two episodes down, we had 4 months later and Lizards.
Yes.
So, Dave, what do you think so far this season?
I went in... I was a little disappointed in the season opener because I was expecting, like, a big, big, huge event, and it wasn't that at all. And after watching it, I was like, okay, I was probably expecting just way too much. I was expecting, like, this huge, like, you know, opening sequence. But when they're just trying to ease you back into it. I am very, very intrigued about what's going on with the older generation. I think that that's the best thing that we have going on in the show right now. We had the death of Hero's father, and someone trying to go after Peter and Nathan's mother, Mrs. Petrelli, and how there are, I think there's 7 others, I believe that they said, because I think there's 9 total.
Right, I think so.
So, that is my favorite aspect of the show right now. Like, I want to know about these older generations. I especially want to know about Peter and Nathan's dad. I want to know what his powers were, and, I mean, you found out that he ended up killing himself, so everyone thinks. And Mrs. Petrelli said that he's tried to kill himself before, so I really want to know what's going on with him.
Right. I think
so. What did you think about season 1?
Oh, I agree. I think that is by far the most interesting part of the show for me, because really it's kind of like what they did in Watchmen, where you have a cast of completely new heroes that no one's ever heard of before. Or, you know, these aren't characters who've been in comics for 40 years that we've grown up and grown attached to, but yet they've created a legacy aspect to these heroes where there was an older generation, and it's kind of it's all a false continuity in television terms, but within the show, it's kind of a false continuity that they've presented us with that feels like this world has a history to it. And so that really, it's interesting to me that they've done that, and it's coming across really, really well. And so I'm sure we're going to get a flashback episode at least once this season with the older generation of heroes, which excites me because I really want to see more Linderman. And a young Linderman, I think, would be really cool to see.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
So that aspect is exciting. I don't really care for the stalker kid who's always outside his window.
He's a little weird.
Like, he's nice enough. Like, if you just kept him in school and, like, just kind of getting to know Claire, that's fine. Like, both have crushes on girls. Like, we've all been there. But he's constantly, like, hanging outside her window spying on her, and that makes it a little creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy.
Yeah, especially last night when we saw her, or the other night when we saw her cut off her toe. And then,
that was a big deal, man. When she got the scissors, and Claire, I think Claire is the most important character this season. Like, I think she's changed and she's really embraced the whole, like, I'm young but I'm different and I really have to deal with this. And I think Hayden Panettiere is doing a great job of portraying the character. And, like, right now, Claire is the most interesting character on the show, I think, because it's like, if there really was a young girl in that situation, that's exactly what she would be like. And she's not, like, overly, you know, like, emotional. She's not like the Cassie Sandmark and the Wonder Girl, but she's just like, it's a perfect balance, and I'm really, really impressed with it. But, man, when she took the scissors to that little toe, I was just, whoa.
Yeah. There's some stuff I'm surprised they don't get away with on primetime television. But I love how they've brought her through these seasons to a normal teenage girl who just wants to be normal. She knows she has these abilities, and she just wants to be normal, to learning about them, embracing them, and then wanting to discover her full potential and use that potential to help others. Like, she's how she explains, like, if she can regenerate, would her blood help other people who've lost limbs or organs or stuff like that regenerate, you know, which is a perfectly interesting situation. I'm also very kind of into the virus that's killing off the heroes, which we don't really know about.
That's very interesting.
It started to happen, and Mohinder can, we've seen it with Molly and the Haitian now.
I was so excited to see the Haitian back.
Yes, that was good. And then see him get his powers back, and Mohinder just, you know, totally forgot about what happened. I was like, oh, that was exciting. I think the Haitian, you know, we're gonna be filled in on the lost 4 months between seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
What I find interesting is the first time we see Peter at the end of the first episode, he doesn't remember. He has no memory, and he's wearing the Haitian's necklace.
Exactly.
So was there a run-in with the Haitian, or? Or once Peter regenerated, did something happen to where he needed to forget what happened or something like that? So I find that very interesting. And did that relate to the Haitian having the disease somehow? So
yeah, those are very valid points. We also have seen, like, Peter's using a new power. Like, he has, like, a little EMP power, which I think it could be from Ted, but it's not, like, I don't think Peter would ever have that much control over it. Because you see him use, like, he's used DL's powers, and he's using his normal powers like Claire. But his little EMP power is what he's been using most of all. And so I'm really intrigued to see where that came from.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm going to disagree with you. I wasn't expecting anything, like, wham-bam huge in my face on that first episode. But I think they did a great job of just slowly bringing you back in, and it's not right after, you know, where we left off at. We're 4 months down the road, and we see how these people are all trying to put their lives back together. And that's really, I think, a better take to do on it, to ease viewers back in on the first couple episodes. And they've created a lot of intrigue, so, you know,
I really want to see more Nathan Petrelli. I think the biggest, like, Nathan's my favorite character, and I think you never really saw a lot of him in the first season, and that made a little bit of sense because it always had to be about him, you know, teetering that line between what he was going to do and between good and evil and helping Peter and helping Linderman. But since then, we've seen a very, very grizzled Nathan Petrelli. And there's one instance where he's in the bar and he looks into the mirror and he sees himself, and he sees himself, but he's scarred almost. It was very, very weird. Like, that totally came out of nowhere. But I want to see more of Nathan. I want to see what's going on with him, how he's dealing with all of this, and obviously they're going to show everything that's going to happen. They're going to show what's happened in the 4 months, but I'm intrigued by that. Well, I'm not sure how I feel about Hero's journey in the past. At points, I really like it, and at other points, I'm just kind of like, okay, I don't know how I feel about it. What do you think?
I think, well, going back, okay, I'm going to answer one thing first before I go down to the other one. Regarding Nathan Petrelli, like, what I really like about his character so far is what we've seen of him is that, and this happened in the finale of season one, is throughout season one, he was such this gray character, and what side was he going to be on? And he kept kind of going back and forth, and at times he thought he was really cool, and at times he could be the biggest asshole in the world. But he's finally picked a side, and he's even demonstrated that with his mother, who, you know, he casts out. He's like, you know, you're a villain, and I can't believe I was almost going to follow you. I love
Yeah, that's true, man. He's like, he just straight up calls her evil, and I was like, good man, Nathan.
Yeah, like, I love that he's finally gone somewhere if it's not so ambiguous. So I am really excited about Nathan, and I'm sure we'll get more about it later. But regarding Hero, I think I like it because that's a really kind of fun part of the show, and this season especially, starting off, it seems really dark, even darker than last season we started, with the twins and how they keep killing people, and you know, what's happened to Peter and what's happening to Claire and the older generation getting killed off. It's a very dark couple of episodes so far, and Hero's journey just seems to be pure fun. Like, that's kind of the breath of fresh air to where it doesn't get weighed down so much that they interject that, and it's like, oh, I can breathe. Okay, well, you know, he's at least having fun, and I think that's good for him, because if you put him in the current situation where it's so dark, like, I don't want Hero to get so dark. He's kind of that character.
Plus, so in the current situation, his father just died, so definitely when he gets back, it's going to really affect him.
Yeah, so I'm happy with that so far. I think it's interesting that, like, it was pretty obvious that he was going to take on the Kensei role, or in some sense. But, no, it's nice. It's that breath of fresh air that doesn't weigh the story down too much with too much heaviness, so I like it. It's been a good 2 episodes. I am really excited for this season.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty stoked. The other, like, just how you're saying, like, how dark it was, in the last episode, Lizards, when you see Nathan's mom getting attacked, and you don't see what's attacking. You don't see what's attacking her. All you do is you see it from the attacker's perspective. You just see something clawing at her. And it seems to be invisible, because when you get in there, when they get into the room, it's gone. But that was very, very intense, very disturbing. And like you said, like, there's some stuff that they get away with on the show that is pretty amazing for primetime TV. But that that was pretty bad.
There was the moment right before that when she was being interrogated by Parkman, and he was in her head, and she yelled at him, "Get out of my head." I jumped on the couch.
Yeah, that was actually really good.
That freaked me out. When she yelled, and I was like, ooh, that was creepy. And we see in the two-way mirror when she's being attacked that she's been attacked by some invisible force, and it was really kind of disturbing. But like I said, a lot of good plot elements have started, and just really excited to see where they go. I don't think this show's going to have a sophomore slump.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's here to stay.
So, all right, so on to our next feature. We both bought the Superman Doomsday DVD, and we have very opposing views of it, so we wanted to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
So, starting off, I really like this movie, and David did not so much. So
I did not like it.
What you had, and I think I know what you're going to say, but I want to hear what you have to say.
You know, first of all, I just have to say that I always end up being the negative one, and I don't think that that's very fair. Because I really like everything, and I really want to like things. But going into this, I was just kind of like, I was very wary, because it is the death of Superman and the return. And I just bought the omnibus, so I know how big of a story that is. And so to turn it into an animated movie, I'm thinking, I'm not sure if that's the greatest idea. And so I know that they're not going to have Hal Jordan in it. I know they're probably not going to have the fourth Superman. It makes sense. So I'm just like, okay, we'll see what happens. But, like, I didn't like feel anything watching this. I didn't feel like I felt when Superman died and I read it. I wasn't happy to see his return. I was just like there's so many things that took me out of it. Like the voice acting I thought was horrible, especially Anne Heche as Lois Lane. I thought she was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Oh, I'm so on the other side of the fence on that. I thought this was the best work she's ever done.
No, definitely not. I thought Adam Baldwin, who was a Superman, I thought he did he was pretty okay.
He was okay. Lex Luthor was James Masterson?
James Marsters, from Spike in Smallville. He did Lex Luthor. And I think he did a good job, but I think the only thing there, and it's a nitpick with me, is that I love the Justice League Lex Luthor. Like, in my head, that's just how Lex Luthor sounds, so it was weird that it was, you know, someone else.
Yeah.
I think the whole story sucked.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's not that different from in the comics.
Well, I think, like, going up into to Doomsday, I was like, okay, this is cool, but then making a clone of Superman, and then having the clones go at it, and then having him destroy all these other clones, I was like, I don't like this. I guess I can't say it was bad. I can't say that the story was bad. It just, I didn't like it. And I'm not trying to hold it to the actual story, because I knew that they weren't going to be able to do the actual story. But I just thought it was kind of lame. I don't know.
So you just didn't like the execution of it. Like, how they did his return.
I didn't like the return. The return was the biggest part of the issues I had. I thought him going against Doomsday, I thought that was good. I thought just the whole concept of the return, having the clone Superman, I thought it was dumb. It was just like an excuse to put him into the black suit and make him different and have him go at it. I mean, they could have at least put the cyborg in there. Like, they could have made it into the cyborg or something. But to have him go up just against, like, a clone, I just thought it was just, like, weak.
I thought it worked kind of like the cyborg. Like, it was a Lex Luthor bred clone, so it wasn't evil Superman, just like the cyborg.
The cyborg was an actual character that had an actual, like, had intentions to it. Like, I just saw that this clone was, like, an empty clone, and that there was no reason, really, for this clone to be wrong. Like, it was just because it was taking orders from Lex, and then it, you know, turned against Lex. It was just kind of like, I don't buy it.
Okay.
But I think another, like, the main thing I didn't like about it was the whole thing that, like, it is PG-13, it's going to be, like, really, really edgy and everything. But I thought a lot of that stuff was really uncalled for. Like, you don't have Superman bleeding the whole time, but then randomly he'll get punched and then he's just throwing up blood. And I'm like, I don't really need to see that. And I think the point where I gave up on the movie was when Lex Luthor murders his secretary or his whatever. I thought that was so uncalled for. And I thought that wasn't even, like, in character.
It was totally gratuitous. But that was the point. Like, that's...
No,
that's,
but I thought it was... I thought Lex it was Luthor even in character. I thought it was, like...
Lex would do that in a heartbeat.
I don't think so. I don't think it would be like that, anyway. I thought it would be more calculated or something, but not like, oh, you have bad news? Okay, hold on. Gunshot. Bam! Dead. And I was like, what? I was like, what just happened? Am I really watching this?
It took me back, for sure, because it was hard to see. But it wasn't even hard. It was just different for me to see an animated Lex Luthor do something like that. But,
yeah.
I think that was totally in character. I think that was very gratuitous, but I think it was gratuitous for the sake of being gratuitous, but I think it worked within the type of story they were trying to tell. They were trying to tell a more graphic Superman story. Not even a more adult Superman story, but a much more graphic Superman story. And I think that goes back to the Superman writer. I'm going to start with the bad before I get to the good of what I thought about this movie.
Okay.
the only part that I really had to get past first was that this Superman was not, even though it looked very similar to the animated series, it was not a part of the animated series. This is a standalone movie. You kind of have to assume that Superman's maybe one of the only superheroes on the planet. So it was just kind of odd to kind of go into that. And the fact that, you know, in the Justice League, we now have a Superman that we've got years of history with, to where this Superman we don't really have years of history with. And so when he does die, it's kind of hard to feel that emotional punch in the gut when he goes down. You know, you just have to assume, well, it's Superman, so you have to kind of feel for him. But once I kind of disassociated myself from that, I really enjoyed it. I laughed out loud when a giant robot spider showed up.
Yes, Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith was in there.
Had a cameo. I was like, I believe they actually did that. Like that, it seemed kind of odd, but then the turnaround of that was very good with the clone killing the toy man who, you know, created the giant spider, which was another just totally gratuitous part, but I think it worked very well to show the point of how Superman would be if he went too far, became kind of authoritarian. But going to the good side now, I thought Superman was okay, voice casting wise. I thought it worked for the role. But I thought Anne Heche did very well. I thought...
Oh, gosh.
And I was kind of on the fence. I was like, well, it could go either way until the after his death and how she's dealing with his loss and when she starts talking to Clark's mom. That was the part where I was like, wow, this is good. Like, she's really good after this. And when he comes back and she's like, you missed my apartment, and she's trying to decide whether or not it's really him. I thought actually they handled Jimmy Olsen kind of well. They kind of used him as a metaphor for the morals of Metropolis once Superman was gone, how Jimmy's and Metropolis's morals kind of left.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought that was kind of an interesting metaphor. And Lex Luthor, awesome. I totally disagree with you. I think he was totally in character. I thought it was kind of an interesting take on him to create a Superman to continually beat up on every night. And just the kind of aspect of why Lex would miss Superman. So I thought that was really interesting, but I thought it was totally in character. Like, it's not the first time we've seen a Lex Luthor try and create a clone of Superman, and that's one of the bizarro origins, but I love the fact that he keeps him, you know, in a room of red sunlight and just beats on him every night, just to kind of feel that satisfaction.
Right.
But I thought the arrogance of Lex Luthor, how during the whole fight as the city's being demolished with Superman and Doomsday, Lex is just kind of standing there like he's untouchable in the city. And I thought it was very good how the clone turned against Lex. And I thought they did a good enough job trying to capture the bigger elements of the comic story and put it into an hour and a half long film. You can't have the Green Lantern fight, which was unfortunate.
All that makes sense.
And you can't it wouldn't have been bad. You didn't even have to voice cast it, but it was hard for me to see a world without Superman where during like the funeral scene, no other superhero around. Like, you think there'd be some kind of acknowledgement. And that was my favorite part, was how all the other heroes dealt with the absence of Superman in the funeral for a friend storyline. But, you know, I got past that, and I thought his return was okay. I thought his little robot buddy in the fortress, that acted more as the Eradicator role from the storyline. Yeah. And then I felt the clone was actually kind of a hybrid of
Superboy
and the cyborg. So,
see, I guess my kind of... I'm going to go to my good here in a second. I guess, like, I was really excited to see some stuff like you just said, like, the Kevin Smith line and the giant robot spider and everything. But, like, if you can put that kind of stuff in it, then they should also put in a little things for the hardcore fans for, like, I think it would have been really cool if, like, while they were destroying all the clones of Superman, like, one clone wasn't destroyed and you see that it's in the image of Superboy. Like, I think they should have done, like, a little bit of stuff like that. Like, don't make it obvious, but kind of, you know, kind of lean that way. And I was kind of disappointed in that.
They could have done a little wink to the fans. Like, have one of the younger clones or something in the tank come out okay or something like that.
Just something like that. Now, this movie was $15. And while I honestly don't have many good things to say about the actual movie, I would have paid far more than $15 for the special features on this DVD, because the documentary was one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life, and I'm not even joking when I say that. Like, they have the documentary of all the original writers and all the artists of The Death and Return of Superman, and they go through the whole thing since day one. They talk about planning it, and they talk about how they came up with the idea and how it evolved, and they have old tapes of them actually in their meetings. And I was like, dude, I was glued to the TV when I was watching these special features. Like, I thought it was something that I was just going to turn on and maybe just kind of glance through, but I was just, I couldn't get enough of it. I loved the special features.
That documentary David's talking about is called Requiem and Rebirth, Superman Lives, which documents the creative process behind the actual comic book storyline in the early 90s.
And it was brilliant.
It was great to see the development of the story, and also, and you know, David and I were pretty young when that happened. We were both reading comics, and we remember, you know, you remember how big this event was when you watch this documentary. Like, this really was a huge event, and it was a huge, it had a huge impact on comics that we're still feeling today. Like, this was really one of the big events, the first.
Yeah, this was like one of the major shifts in comic books. This is like, yeah, this was the first big deal. Like, I mean, people who, younger people who are reading now, I mean, this is like the Captain America death and Spider-Man, but this was even bigger back then. Like, even in the videos, like, it has like lines of people waiting to get this issue, and just people like buying it by the stacks.
Yeah, how many issues are to hearing them talk about? But I got a real kind of nice sense of nostalgia watching this. And then when they're interviewing the creators, and they're talking about how they killed off Superman, but then how they brought him back, and then, and also the people's reactions to Superman leaving, and the writers were getting choked up, and as they were getting choked up, I was kind of getting choked up, because they're talking about the world of Superman.
And it was like, so good.
I felt more emotion watching this than I did the actual film.
Yeah, me too.
This is the Superman that we have been attached to for you know, 65, 70 years at this point. And this is, you know, this was the death and return of Superman, and you, like David said, he bought the omnibus, and I'd recommend anyone who hasn't read the story buy the omnibus.
Oh yeah, get the omnibus.
Because it was a huge monumental storyline, and it's one that I think every mainstream comic fan should read. I think it's a very important part of mainstream comics.
Oh yeah. This is one of the best stories in comic. This is, I mean, by far it's one of the best stories DC has ever told. Just like you were saying, I think it's one of those things where it was such a big deal that they killed Superman and that they brought him back, and going through and seeing the creative process about it, like, it makes you appreciate it so much more, because you can see that the writers and the artists, I mean, they were just as into it as we are. And there's a point in the documentary where Louise Simonson, she's talking about how she had to write when Lois is talking to Clark's mom about it, kind of like in the movie. And she starts crying when she starts talking about the dialogue. And then looking at her crying while she's thinking about it, I'm starting to get a little teary. And I'm just like, this is why it worked. Because you had, like, I mean, Superman is this, you know, bigger-than-life icon. And, like, all these writers and all these artists that were doing the story, like, they really understood that. And so it's a really amazing thing to go back and to watch them all talk about it. So,
and
the movie is okay, but you should really buy this DVD just for the special features.
Yeah, another thing I remember only after watching this, but you know, Captain America's going on now. Captain America's dead, and they're continuing the book without him for a while. But Superman did the same thing, and for like four or five months, There was no Superman in comics.
There was no Superman at all.
Like you were saying, like you were just saying, how he's this huge iconic character, and they killed him off in comics, but he's a character who's been around for 70 years. Like, even if you don't read him, it's kind of comforting to know that this character is around in some sense, in a fiction sense, in a that he's being printed.
Yeah.
But you really got the sense, like, for like 4 or 5 months, it really was a world without Superman, and it was weird. Like, it felt wrong. I can't believe this character's not around. So even as just like a fictional character, he works on a level that's above just a comic book character. He's a part of literary canon at this point. So right. It's, you know, it was kind of touching to see that. So very good DVD. I recommend it a little slightly higher than David does, but like we both said, go out and check it out. It's well worth the $15.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So we hope you like the new format of the show. We will be including more special features and more reviews in the upcoming weeks. If you want to give us some feedback on the show, you can email us at contact@fanboysstrikeback.com. And you can also go on our website, www.fanboysstrikeback, and there you can read our comic book reviews each week, get caught up on comic book news, and also go to our forums, and you can respond to topics that we've started or start your own topic. We check the forums every day, and we like to respond and hear what people think and get their ideas on the things that we talk about during the show. So, hop on there and check us out.
Yeah, you can also visit us on our MySpace page, myspace.com/thefanboysstrikeback. We also have our comic reviews there on our blog on the page. You can come be our friends, do all that kind of stuff. And also, you can check us out on iTunes, Podcast Alley. If you do listen to us on those shows, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think, things that you want to see more of, things you want to see less of. Any feedback is good feedback. And I guess that's it. We're sorry for the hiatus. That was my fault. I had to do a little move, and then we had a little problem getting some internet. But we're back, and we're ready. And so I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we'll see you guys next week. I'm